back, everyone. You know the drill. My name is Meg Kruger. I'm the content specialist with Pioneer Athletics. And today I'm very excited to be joined by Ryan DeMay. He's a proud OSU alum, so already a winner in our book. And he is the owner and operator of Field Source Ohio. And today we're going to be talking justifying costs, labors, budgets, some nuggets that really are important for sports turf managers to kind of have in their tool belt. Ryan, I'll let you take the reins and introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about your gig, and then we'll get started.
Yeah, thanks, Meg. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and chat with everybody on Groundskeeper Chat. I think what you guys have been doing has been phenomenal in your way to connect with people. So it's very, very cool to be a part of that, first off. So about me. So I've been in the turf industry as a whole for over 20 years now, and started off in golf and then got into sports turf here almost a decade ago. And my experience there was in the municipal side of things, so parks and recreation specifically. And during that time, I got to learn an incredible amount just about the conversations that take place within those spaces between administrators and programmers, athletic directors, and the maintenance staff, and how those three groups have to coexist. And so, in my experience, with peers and other people that I networked with over the years, definitely had some conversations with folks that centered around their inability to break through and have a seat at the table, specifically sports turf managers. So I built a business around that. I built a business around not just advocating for sports turf managers, but also for administrators that needed help in that space of communicating with those other groups and individuals in the organizations, athletic directors and programmers. And so really now what I do is go in and do organizational management consulting based around that, and also do project development and construction related to that as well. So consulting on all those things for parks and recreation, K-12 schools, universities, and private sports organizations. And so it's been really, really fulfilling to see, the end result of that work in this space in terms of, just better fields. We can all, if we all can come together and align on some of the things where I see that there's a lot of folks that aren't aligned, I think if we can do a little bit better there, the ultimate end result is that we've got better fields for athletes, coaches, communities, whoever those customers are. And that's really what it's all about. So again, very excited to be here. And you are right, I am a proud OSU alum. So go Bucks. It's almost football season. Really excited about it.
Love that. And you touched on so many things that, I love about the turf industry. One, how versatile it is in the sense that you try something out, hey, maybe this isn't, what I want to make a career out of. I'm going to switch gears. And then 5 years later, you can switch gears again. And then 10 years later, you can switch gears again. And there's just all these opportunities to really, make yourself not only, useful in different avenues in the industry, but also an expert in a sense in different avenues. So that when you are coming across different people with different experiences, you can really talk to those and relate to those experiences. Because in the turf industry, you have access to all those experiences. And that's one thing I love about the industry and just the nature of being able to dip your toes into so many different arenas for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's, what you just said, it was all about growth, right? That mm-hmm. somebody takes a new position or takes a new set of challenges on, whether it's at their current employer or a new one. And it's all about that, you've got to get into a space that's uncomfortable. I know it's really cliche these days, you have to make yourself uncomfortable to grow, but it really is the truth. I mean, at every stage, at least in my career, it's been doing that is embracing, being in an uncomfortable position. And quite honestly, a lot of what I do now in the work I do with consulting clients is about that, is that, a lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about today centers on having some uncomfortable conversations and being put in a situation where you have some uncomfortable choices that maybe you're not used to, maybe you haven't made before, and putting yourself out there a little bit more than maybe you would in the past. And so I think that's where it's a challenge for everybody to sort of rise up. We always ask ourselves, what do we need to do to get that seat? And, we're going to talk about a lot of things, I think, tangible and theory related and everything like that. But the number one thing I would say there is be okay with being uncomfortable and be okay with having an uncomfortable conversation. Not that it needs to be awkward. That's completely different than uncomfortable. Not that it needs to be, going into that conversation with your dukes up and defensive or something like that. Those are completely unrelated, but uncomfortable means addressing the things that really need to be addressed and getting clarity on those.
Yeah. And I think the clarifications that you just made is, you know, those uncomfortable conversations don't have to be, emotionally charged, or I love what you said, going in already defensive, but really just touching base on, I'm valuable and I'm going to make you see my value, or I'm going to make you see the value in whatever I'm preaching or advocating for. If you don't see the value, at least making sure that you're, advocating for something that you truly believe in, and making sure that you're saying those things instead of, on the back end complaining that they're not seeing eye to eye, but then, you never advocated for those solutions. So I think that's a great place to start. When you're coming across, sports turf managers on a consultant basis, how do you really help them understand that they need to be their own advocate in a lot of these situations? And taking it one step further, how do you kind of equip them with those tools to be an advocate, an effective advocate for themselves in their position?
That's a great question. And I think really it comes down to a couple of things, right? So I think number one is, even in your own space, right, within, athletic turf maintenance, or if you're charged with doing the grounds for the entire school district or all the parks in your park system, whatever the case might be, is that you have to have a vision and outcome for what those places and spaces should look like, from an aspect of safety, from the performance or playability aspect, if we're talking about fields, from the aesthetic aspect, right? So all those things, you need to have a very clear vision that you can talk to people about that don't get what we do. They're not going to care that, hey, I aerified that last year 2 times with 3/4 inch solid tines, and then I came back and I top dressed the holes, and then this year I think we're going to verticut it 2 directions, 3/8 of an inch deep. Like, they don't care. They really don't. And I know it breaks my heart too, because I would love to nerd out and talk to them about that like all day long. But what you have to realize is, set the vision. Hey, we're going to make this the safest field, and here are some of the challenges that we face in doing that. Here's how we're going to overcome them, right? And being able to set that stage and that vision for anybody, regardless of who it is, if it's a parent, a coach, an administrator, an athletic director, somebody from the community that just walks by and asks, hey, what's this? Being able to have those answers and that vision and being able to communicate that. And more importantly, to your staff, right? So that they know, hey, this is what we're trying to do on a day in, day out basis. The most successful people I come across in this business and in consulting are the people that can clearly and coherently speak and help people visualize what that end result, what that outcome looks like. And, to that point, sometimes it's a little bit of daydreaming, and sometimes it's, putting your feet back on the ground and coming back to reality. But I think it's the middle ground there of trying to develop that. So, I find it useful to sit down and write some of those things out. And if it's a field by field basis, if it's a bigger picture of, a whole campus or a whole park system, whatever the case might be, but try and be as specific as you can of what that outcome looks like, number one. Number two is, quantify it, right? So we're in an age now where, especially at a higher level within these organizations, people want data. And we'll talk a little bit about more in that in detail on that here as we go through it. But I want to say that, from quantifying it, it could be very simple things like, just money saved of, we changed to this seed and now it requires less fungicide for us to, keep this field in proper shape, right? To be safe and playable and look the way that we want it to look. It could be really simple stuff like that. It could be improvement in quality. So sometimes it's not necessarily a dollars and cents thing, but it's an improvement in quality that we can rate based on, feedback from customers, feedback from coaches, whatever the case might be. And really, you talk about a couple other things here too, ROI. So return on investment for a project, how quickly is that going to pay back for us? So those can be tracked in, terms of additional hours of use that we have, additional money or revenue that's earned from those fields. Or it could just be simply, hey, we're not renting out as many games, right? Because we, you know, have committed to laser grading these fields in-house, you know, once every other year, something like that. It could be something real simple, but those are powerful things, right? To be able to take back to anybody, because here's the thing is if you're right, if your vision is right, you execute it and now you've got data to back it up, nobody can dispute that. Nobody can dispute it. So those are the kind of things that put you on solid footing, that puts you on the footing of where, again, we talked about getting emotional versus, you know, having empirical arguments that have data to back them up, numbers, hard facts to back them up. And I think that's another thing that we can do a better job of, because quite honestly, you know, there's wins and losses in the games that are played in our field. But when it comes to quantifying and saying, hey, that field is where it needs to be versus that field's not where it needs to be in terms of maintenance, we don't have a really good way of doing that. You know, we have PCI from STMA, you know, performance score on the field, but nobody is really using that, I think, to the fullest extent that they could or should. So I think it comes back to real simple things of, you know, safety, playability, and aesthetics. How do we evaluate those fields and know if we're being successful or not? And that starts with having a vision of what are we actually shooting for in this case. So those two things, again, just a vision and an outcome, and then quantifying things so that you have metrics that will give you quantifiable results and hard facts.
Of course. And, you know, definitely having the vision, I think you've outlined is this first step. And then having the conversations so that you know where you should, you know, meet those higher ups, you know, what's important to them as far as, is it really important for them to get as many tournaments at the Parks and Rec level in a season? Or is it really important for them? Does ROI really resonate with them? Or can they meet you with safety and playability? Having those conversations so you really know where they align, but then also making sure that you have a seat at the table when the decision-making conversations are kind of happening. So how do you really help sports turf managers advocate for themselves to get a seat at the table, or even before they have a seat at the table, how do you help them understand why that's really important for them to be involved in those conversations? And, you know, you can take it. I think you know where I'm going.
Yeah. No, I understand completely. And, you know, we touched on a little bit in the first question about value, right? What is my value to this organization? And I think that's a really important thing to take stock of on a regular basis and know. So, you know, there's an old Warren Buffett quote that says, price is what you pay, but value is what you get, right? So what you pay a sports field manager is exponentially less than what that person's value is. We know that, right? But I think showing that to the higher ups is really what we're talking about here. So a lot of times, like what you said, of trying to identify those priorities, it's literally as simple as finding out what will take that customer's pain away, or what will increase their happiness or their, you know, their level of satisfaction, and identifying those things with those different stakeholders. And sort of, that's one of the, maybe the more challenging things. And probably what, from what I see in consulting and trying to bring these groups together just internally within an organization, is that there's very distinct and different needs. But they're all going for the same goal, right? They're just not aligned on how they get there a lot of times. So, you know, when it comes to getting a seat at the table, I think there's three things that you have to have in mind, right? So preparation is number one. Always have those numbers, those hard facts, the projects that need to get done, the things that need to happen during a process for a field when it comes to design and the things that you want to see in there, having things that you want to see during construction and wrap up, and then maintenance and how you prepare for that eventual handover on a new field or even a renovation, right? So preparation is doing a lot of work that might never even get done and preparing for it, but being ready when the time comes. So that's number one. The second thing is perspective. And like I just said, there's so many of these different constituencies or groups within these projects or within these organizations that it's, and this is where it helps to take the emotion out of it, you know, a little foreshadowing here is just understanding and putting yourself in the perspective of the other person, right? What are the challenges, you know, if I'm the sports field manager, what are the challenges that my administrator, you know, my superintendent, my parks director, my mayor, the general manager of the team, whatever. What are some of the pressures they're under and how are they looking at this situation? I need to put myself in those shoes, right? And even sit there and brainstorm out and think about it, right? And that helps me at least understand the situation there, because a lot of times we look at it only from our perspective, and you could say it's selfish. You could say that it's just self, you know, self-preservation, whatever the case might be. But bottom line is that these folks are under pressure too. They have other things that they're worried about that maybe you don't even see. So I think that's another thing that's useful when you go through these processes. And even if it's just on a year to year, a maintenance thing, right? Is okay. What's the perspective of my boss this year? And what are the priorities of he or she that I need to try and make my priorities, right? And that kind of leads me into the priorities pieces. Once I know where their perspective lies, we can sort of get some alignment and, you know, okay, we go look through, okay, well, what might the athletic director be concerned with? And what might be the facilities director or the superintendent concerned with? And you start to do this brainstorming stuff, you can circle all these things that sort of are, okay, hey, that's the same, that's the same, that's the same. And you can take those back and have a pretty direct and meaningful conversation with those folks and say, hey, these are things I know that look like it kind of affects all of us. So let's focus on these. What do you think? Versus, hey, what do you want to focus on this year? I mean, that's such a broad and open question. It kind of, it makes it really uncomfortable versus saying, hey, I've done some preparation, right? I've taken some perspective and now I'd like to set some priorities to make sure that we're all on the same page here. So that, again, that these awkward or defensive conversations don't happen later on. So I think when you start to do that and you put yourself forward like that, put yourself out there, you're more often than not, you're going to get a seat at the table, because people are going to say, hey, this person is taking initiative, right, to try and get out in front of these issues, to try and be thoughtful and helpful to us, right, as administrators, as programmers or athletic directors, whatever the case might be. This person is trying to be helpful for us, and so they deserve to be a part of this conversation. And I think it's okay to say this during this priority setting thing, is that, hey, the decisions that you make as an athletic director, the decisions that I make as a sports field manager, the decisions that the administrator makes, they all have an effect on everybody in here. So we should all at least have a say. Doesn't necessarily mean that what we say is going to be the way it is, but we should all at least have a say. So you just have to get out there. And I think that's the one thing that people miss a lot of times, is that they don't just ask. And I think, Meg, you alluded to that earlier, is sometimes you just have to flat out say, hey, I would like a seat at the table. And not have that that moment afterwards where the decision's made and you're like, hey, I thought we were, you can alleviate a lot of that issue if you come up front and say, hey, when the next big thing comes, I would like to have a seat at the table, because we're trying to all be on the same page here. And I think that's important.
Yeah. And I think one thing that really resonated with me is your perspective point and how I really think empathy up front can go a long way. I think it creates a trust between the two parties when you come to the table and say, hey, I've already kind of considered your position here and I have empathy for what you're going through. As far as I know, you've got a lot of people on your back and I've got a lot of priorities myself. But I think that right off the bat creates that trust between the two parties. Like, hey, we both understand that we have, you know, this, that, and the other that we have to meet or, you know, that we have to take care of on our own end. And I think that can be really effective if you have that, if you already kind of take that emotion into account coming into the conversation, it will maybe take some of the emotion out of the actual conversation that the two parties may have down the line. So I thought that was a really cool point that you made there. And also, yeah, like you said, as simple as just asking up front, because, you know, as much as we're advocating that you take the perspective of others that you're having a conversation, sometimes they may not be taking your perspective into account. So really just getting on their radar and saying, hey, I've got a perspective that I would like to share. That can also go a long way. Simple and hopefully effective for them down the line. So that's really me just to you know, flattering you that I liked everything you had to say. Just reiterating that I loved everything that you had to say.
Awesome.
But yeah, really going into the next kind, you know, now we've got a seat at the table. We are prepared with our different perspectives and our different priorities, really getting into the nitty gritty of, all right, now we're having those difficult conversations that have to do with cost and have to do with justifying labor and budgets. When you're, you know, coming from that consultant perspective, how do you really show them that when they're dealing with higher ups who may not understand the science or the necessity of the sports turf manager, how do you show them their options for having those difficult advocacy for the cost, the labor, the budget, those tough spots?
No, those definitely are. They're points of contention because anytime money gets involved, it becomes emotional without warning and sometimes without prejudice. I mean, in that sense, like you could be having a conversation with somebody you're very close to in that organization and know well, have worked with for a long time. And when that subject comes up, it just instantly becomes a different sort of conversation. And I think, again, where it comes back to is, number one, and this is going to sound a little bit repetitive, but have a story to tell. Just like we talked about the vision, is have a story to tell. There is a lot of things that we can track now with data, right? So many things that, you know, I always say, if you don't have a story to tell with the data, don't track it. It's just, it's not really worth your time, I think, in many cases, to track so many different things and then not do anything with it, right? And so it could be something simple, and I'll give you a tangible example is, you know, somebody might say, hey, you know, we really need to get this new mower for our field. And okay, well, the first question is, well, why? Well, you know, the old one, it sucks. Okay, well, that's not a very quantifiable thing. Sucks, I don't see anywhere on the 1 to 10 scale. So then the next thing might be, okay, well, if I said that in a different way, if I said, well, hey, you know, this mower here, you know, we've tracked the cost for the last 2 years. We actually put $9,000 in repair and maintenance into it last year. We put $7,000 in the year before. So right now, our costs are up over 20% year over year just on repair and maintenance, notwithstanding that a replacement, while it is $60,000, we could have used that money on repair and maintenance over here as a capital budget item, right, to start replacing this or at least start putting stuff, you know, money away to take care of that, right? We could also talk about, hey, you know, this mower, you know, we have, you know, 33 weeks in our mowing season, right? And so that's 165 days. Of those 165 days, it was down for 39 of them, right? So then we can take a percentage and say, because it was down, we were waiting on parts or whatever. That tells a much different story than the mower sucks. And the mower may suck. I don't want to discount that, because that does happen. But having data that you can back up and tell that story with is super powerful. It is something that gets people's attention. And even if it doesn't get immediate results, it's going to come back to you, I think, in spades later on, because it tells people that you're, again, this is that seat at the table conversation of how do you get there. It's showing people that you're paying attention and you're on the ball when it comes to turning, you know, this, what we do, which is art and science, but turning it, you know, sort of into a little bit of a business, right? You're operating a small business out of these agencies, parks and rec, schools, universities, whatever, you know. So if you look at it like that and show people that you're thinking about it in terms of costs and benefit and things like that, it can absolutely make a difference. Now, you know, we talk about labor, and this is a tough one because a lot of us in this space are in agencies and organizations that the pay scales are very, very static, right? They don't move a lot because, hey, the market shows us that we have, you know, fewer turf graduates and, you know, people are getting jobs at landscape companies making $25 and $30 an hour. Our businesses and our organizations just aren't set up to respond to that kind of thing, right? So what can we do, right? What are the things that we can do? And a lot of times this is taking it back to leadership, right? Taking it back to administration and saying, hey, listen, I am only able to pay, you know, Charlie's Landscaping down the street just hired somebody for $28 an hour. I can't compete with that, right? Dollars and cents wise. But here's what I'm asking of you. Here's the things that we can control, right? And this is stuff you can take back to your crew and you can tell them, hey, I'm going to do my best to make sure that we have the best equipment, to make your job as simple as possible. It's never going to be easy, but I can make your job more simple, right? Number one. Number two is, you know, the culture thing of trying to, you know, create a workplace where people enjoy coming to work. And, you know, I know that a lot of our jobs, you know, in this space sometimes seem like Groundhog Day. Hey, we got to go pick up the trash. We got to mow. We got to paint fields. We got to, you know, it's easy to get in that rut and say these things, but you should be excited about what you're doing. You should get up with some fire in your belly and go do it and show that to your staff. And I think that makes a bigger difference than, you know, the guy that went and worked for, you know, Charlie's Landscaping, that he is going to be in Groundhog Day because it is go, 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 money, money, money. And it doesn't have to be that way at a school. You know, you're at, in my mind, when you're at a school, you're at a Parks and Rec, you're serving something bigger than yourself. And I think kind of relying back on that and falling back on that to tell folks, hey, we're here for something bigger. You know, thousands of people, hundreds of people, whatever, are going to have a good time every day because of what we did. And that's important. That resonates with people. So I think, you know, when it comes to the labor side of things, I get that we're in a tough spot right now, but there are things that we can control. And that's the thing you focus on. It's easy to get upset about, you know, the pay scales and things like that, but just focus on what we can control. And culture doesn't cost anything. It really doesn't. So the last couple of things I'll say here too, when it comes to these conversations is, again, I keep going back to it, but the vision, right? Of articulating that with the budget. So what does it mean? So, you know, what I mean by this is when we're setting budgets, what we're really talking about is setting priorities, right? Usually what we don't run out of money first. We run out of priorities, right? That we can fund. And that's truly what a budget is all about. So when we're doing this in the beginning is talking about, okay, hey, here are the things that we're going to do with this budget for on a yearly basis. And articulating that through graphs, pictures, presentations, videos, whatever, and trying to get that out to as many people so that they understand it. The reason that's important is twofold. One, I can provide updates and show progress over the year so that it's not this just 1 year cycle. Hey, every time that, you know, here, you know, school budgets run July 1 to June 30, and, you know, budget time for most people is going to be after the first of the year coming into February. And if it's just one time a year that you're having that conversation, you're probably going to be really disappointed. You know, just like we do reviews for employees and we want to make sure that we're providing consistent and honest feedback. Same thing with our budgeting processes. I like to see a monthly report 5 minutes long on video. It's just usually like a slideshow with pictures that I'm talking over. I'm coaching clients to talk over and say, hey, here are some of the things we're seeing. Here's where we put the sand top dressing out on the football field. And here's the results from it. And here's what we're seeing in terms of the data, you know, as far as, you know, GMAX goes or playability goes, things like that. Those are what makes the difference because the decision makers, the real decision makers will see that again, as you taking initiative, number one. Number two, they'll see that in terms of every month they're getting an update. So it's fresh in their mind. It's not like, oh, what did we do for sports field maintenance last year? You know, cut them 2% because it's been a tough year. No, you've been in their face showing results. It's going to be really hard for them to turn away, I think, at that point. Now, let's just say it is. Okay, let's say that they do have to make a cut. And they say, and they come into me and they say, Ryan, I'm sorry, it's been tough times. We got to go down 5% this year. And then the issue becomes, okay, that's fine. We'll do 5%. Here are my recommendations for those, you know, those cuts. And here's what you're going to see, you know, and you can go back to your monthlies and say, we're going to cut this and you're not going to see this anymore. You know, so when we talk about, you know, let's just say paint, right? We're going to cut paint out. And guess what? The game fields are only going to get painted once every 2 weeks because that's all we can afford, or the practice fields aren't going to get painted at all. Are you able to withstand that, right? From an administrator's perspective, do you want to hear coaches and parents and everybody calling it? And so, I think those are things too of, you know, saying, hey, if there is going to be a cut, you have put all the information in their hands to know what those cuts would look like, to really feel what those cuts would look like. And that makes it a little bit more, I think, more difficult on their end to actually do it. But if they do, at least they understand what they're giving up. And I think that's a really important piece too.
Definitely. And again, it goes back to bringing them along every step of way of that story so that they really understand, like, man, parents love when there's these nice bright white lines. So if you're wanting to cut paint, this is what it's going to look like if it's done only every, you know, twice a month or something, and right. really having them buy into that, that story and the end product is, I think, really important for sure.
I agree. And I think, and you know, something else that, you know, really helps and segues into our next question too, is thinking about, you know, on the capital budget side is, again, being a little bit more forward there and coming up with a long-term equipment plan. Like, hey, for the next 5 years, forecast out, if we had $20,000 to spend, $40,000, $60,000, $80,000, $100,000, what would that look like? And again, a lot of this sounds like, oh, you know, I'm sure folks are going to hear this and be like, this sounds like so much work. And it's really not, especially if you direct the effort in the right places. And you, if you start having these conversations, you'll figure out really quickly where to direct it. And if you need help, there's certainly people that you can turn to within the sports field community that can help you along with these conversations. But same thing on the project side. A lot of times it's just about that preparation of, hey, you know, we've got, how many of people have heard this? I know that this is going to resonate a lot. Hey, we've got $5,000 just got donated, or $15,000 that is extra in our budget that we didn't realize, and we need to do something with it that's meaningful. What can we do? Be prepared. Have that list and be like, well, here's my list. Here's, let's see here. Here's the scope of work. Here's the cost. Here's everything I have in the $10,000 to $20,000 range. And here's the ROI on those projects. What do you want on the menu? That's a lot easier than saying, well, yeah, you know, I'll come up with something. That doesn't resonate with a lot of confidence in folks, right? So having that list and being prepared and sliding that across the table, you know, like you're the server in a restaurant and saying, hey, here's the menu. What sounds good? And that's work that you can do ahead of time that costs you nothing, right? Other than a little bit of time. And it's also a little bit fun too, to kind of daydream a little bit and be like, hey, you know, what would it be like? And what would that cost? And what, you know, what would the ROI be on that kind of thing? I can't tell you how many times things have worked out in my favor and the favor of my clients simply by being prepared for that conversation when it comes up. And 99% of the time, you have no idea it's coming.
Yeah, Abby McNeil definitely touched on that part in regards to projects when we talked to her about this. Just, mm-hmm. you know, you should be thinking, you know, seasons out, but also 5, 10, 15 years out, so that you always have that wish list kind of, you know, being put into play eventually, so that it doesn't just remain a wish list. It really can be put into practice. And because if you just go day by day, it's like, okay, we got to get this done today. And those big projects or those big goals get further and further away. But when you're doing things or just keeping those projects in mind is when they really are taken off the wish list and put on the to-do list. So I think that's great advice. And, you know, one thing that she also suggested that I think we kind of touched on was the data points, and a huge data point that people can utilize are their user groups. Just, you know, surveying them at the end of the season or at the, you know, once a year, whatever that looks like for you, surveying what they really appreciated or what resonated with them or how many more games they were able to get in because, you know, the fields were safe and playable, really utilizing them as a data point, because that's ultimately going to resonate with the higher ups because those are their customers. So really showing them, hey, your customers really appreciated this. So if you're thinking about cutting back 5%, know that that's going to take away from this, that, and the other, which those are the three things that the customers loved the most, or however you put those into terms for them.
Yeah. The one thing, this is an exercise I do with every client, no matter what type of organization it is anybody who's associated with that field. So I try to do it with as many folks as I can. So players, coaches, administrators, again, all those different groups. And I just simply say, hey, I want you to write down on this note card the top three things that you need to see every day with this field. And then on this other note card, I want you to write out the top three things you never, ever want to see on this field. And right there, you start kind of taking these all out. And usually I'll do it on post-it notes in individual so that we can kind of like group them together. And you start to see these like heat maps of, oh, hey, that's a big one on the like side. Oh, that's a big one on the dislike side. And you get that perspective of everybody. And then it's also visualized. It's now that invisible thing that like, hey, I wonder what Bob, the football coach, thinks about the football field. You don't have to think that anymore. It's right there in front of you. And now everybody has taken that communal approach, right, to setting those priorities. And I'm sure there's going to be people that listen to this and think, man, that sounds really corny and like a waste of time and everything like that. Maybe it is, but is beating your head against the wall and being upset about stuff that you seemingly at this point have no control over, but really do if you take control of it. That's for you to decide. But I'm telling you, it is a it's a very, very impactful thing. And we do it with every group of clients, and it works out fantastically every time.
A tangible and free practice to put into play.
Top three things you always have to see every single day. Top three things you never want to see out there.
Yeah, try I love it, that.
See what you get.
And just involving everyone in that initial conversation, like you said, it creates community. And a quote I like is, you know, happiness is only real when shared. So when you're creating those end products there, it's like you get to rejoice in that win with everyone when it's like, oh, we all bought into this idea. We all bought into this vision in this game plan. And I see the three things that I wanted put into play right here. And if one of their three things wasn't put into practice, they know at least that they were heard and maybe they'll see it later on. I think that's a really tangible thing that people can take away. And again, it's free. It's not something that you're going to have to put forth a ton of labor or cost in order to achieve that. That's something you could do tomorrow with, you know, five representatives from each group or something. So I love that. The next thing I really wanted to touch on, because it was something that resonated with me when we initially talked, was, you know, you've come across clients or peers along the way that, you know, since this is such a niche industry, we have passion for certain things. And we really have expertise in areas that maybe the general public doesn't understand. And so there is emotion and there is that passion associated with some of those topics. How do you translate or educate your clients to advocate for those things they're passionate about without putting their job in jeopardy or putting their position in jeopardy because it can get so emotional or it's such a niche thing that they're unable to translate why it's important?
No, I understand completely. And I think you're right that in most of these organizations, and I worked in some big ones and some small ones and worked with, you know, every range of them, has been that it's very difficult within these organizations to find employees that have more pride and zeal about their work than sports field managers. And so that is in some cases almost weaponized against us, right, when it comes down to these projects. And so I think the first thing, number one, is that be aware of that, you know, just the self-awareness that, okay, if I go into this conversation with a school board member, with whatever, what am I trying to get out of it? And what is the point at which I'm going to bail? You got to know that. You have to know that about yourself. And it's going to be a completely different answer for everybody. Because, you know, I can tell you just my personal journey, I used to be very defensive. I used to be very emotional in these conversations. And I've had a couple of really good mentors along the way have told me, you know, not like throwing wrenches and doing stuff like that, but mentors that have told me, hey, just that, what are you trying to get out of this conversation? What is a win for you to at least get conveyed, not necessarily to get agreement on, right, but to get conveyed? And number two, at what point do you have to walk away and say, hey, you know, I appreciate that, but right now I've got to go. I can't continue to have this conversation right now. So a couple of things, you know, when it comes to this, is I like putting the emotion back on the other person too, and making sure that they understand where I'm coming from. And so something I'll always say to, you know, people that, you know, quote unquote, don't get it, and I'm not labeling anybody is that they don't get it. It's just, you know, it's a different perspective. When you're a kid, you know, you go to a baseball game, let's just say, you know, you go to a Major League Baseball game. Everybody can remember walking through that portal out to where the bleachers are, and you see that field, and it's like, wow. Like that moment, like you have no pulse if you don't have that moment, even if you're a regular person, right? Like you probably should, we should have a mirror to make sure you can fog it, make sure you're good. Now, the thing here is that when I go talk to folks and I say, hey, when that person who is, has no skin in the game, that just is a high school football fan that walks up on those first, you know, set of steps, gets up to the platform of the bleachers to walk up to their seat that they probably sat in for years and years and years and decades and everything like that. What kind of experience do you want them to have? What kind of feelings do you want them to have? And it's kind of powerful because people take it. It's weird because people that aren't as prideful and zeal, you know, full of zeal as we are about this thing, don't even consider that end of it. They don't think about, man, like this does have a profound effect on people. You know, even as, you know, far as, you know, a little league field or something like that. Like if it's a not so nice field, right? And I could use other adjectives for it there, but I'm going to say not so nice field. And what kind of feeling is a kid going to get? Might do it this. He or she want to come back and play on that field? Or are you giving them the best possible stage to go out and enjoy themselves and to, you know, chase competition, chase wellness, chase camaraderie with their friends, all the things that sports are about, right? And I know it's kind of, you know, it's a little bit philosophical, but it does bring into perspective the emotion of what we feel and what we're trying to create and why we're so prideful about it. And so I always try to use that as, you know, something, again, like what you said before, as something to take the air out of the room a little bit and just say, okay, hey, let's just think about this for a second and make sure this is the best thing. The other thing too is, again, all the other stuff that we just talked about, you know, the preparation, setting priorities and taking perspective, all that should have taken place, because if it does, the emotion that you have is going to be so much less. And again, like we just talked about in the previous thought here, that communal presence of, hey, we're all really going for the same thing here. And I this is, you know, become my job, because there is generally a common goal, but there's just not alignment, and there's not very good ways that people go about getting to that end goal. And a lot of things get tripped up. A lot of things get glossed over. And ultimately, you know, it's the sports field manager that has to deal with the downstream effects of that usually. And so we try to get in front of all that. And there are emotional conversations that happen. You know, sometimes those uncomfortable conversations border on emotional. Sometimes they border on defensive, all the stuff we just talked about. But I think if you have in your mind what it is that you feel like you need to get across, and you're okay with that, that you're okay with, hey, I've said my piece. These people understand how I feel and where I'm coming from. And if you know where to bail, that's probably as good as you can get. The last thing I'll say with this is that if you get into a position where you can do those things, right, that you can say what you feel and say what you think and show the facts that you've backed up with all the other stuff that we just talked about, you will find out where everybody in the organization stands, right? And I will tell you that, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and golf is very similar to what we, you know, face here in sports turf. And I will tell you that clarity is the most priceless thing you will ever get in life. And you will have clarity after these conversations.
Yeah. And I loved, you know, what you said, because at the end of the day, sports turf managers are in the business of making memories. You know, whether you're on that, whether you're doing it for the player or the person in the stand that's watching the loved one, or for the team that's coming from out of town, someone's going to have, you know, the best game of their life on that field that day. Either Pete Tebow said that, or Stephen Crockett, can't remember, but I'm attributing either one of them to that. They said when they set out, they, you know, it's not always about the home team. Somebody's going to have the best game of their life on that field that day. And to kind of be in the business of making memories is something that is so special. But again, I love what you said about knowing when to bail and knowing what's important for you and just being able to advocate for what's important to you and knowing at the end of the day that you conveyed your message the best way that you could. And if that Friday night feeling doesn't resonate with somebody, yeah, check to make sure they're breathing because that definitely, even just you setting the stage there for me, it gives you chills. I mean, everyone can relate to that in some sense. But, you know, inevitably there are going to be times when the decision doesn't go your way, or the administrative team decides to go a different direction. And what advice can you give to sports turf managers when that happens? When we initially talked, you had some great insight into, okay, if you're not going this direction on the football field, maybe here's where we can go with the baseball field. And yeah, I loved what you had to say about that.
No, and it's again, trying to treat everything as an opportunity. Again, I'm saying a lot of things that sound cliche, but they're cliche for a reason, like they work. And so, this was a situation I encountered a few years ago as a consultant where, the decision was, hey, do we go synthetic or natural on the football field? Very common situation these days, right? Where folks within that school community are being pushed, administrators see it from one perspective, AD see it from another perspective, a groundskeeper might see it from a completely different perspective. And so in this case, we went through the whole process. We laid out costs. We've talked about, the quantitative side with money. We talked about the qualitative side with, use and safety and all that kind of stuff. And ultimately the decision was made to go with synthetic. And, I consult on both. I think there's a place for both. And certainly synthetic is not going to go away anytime soon. So that's a whole nother debate for another time. But I see no problem with either. I think it's just important to understand the cost, the downstream effects, all that kind of stuff. So back to this conversation is, the groundskeeper was a borderline devastated. I mean, he had put his heart and soul working on this field for at that point, probably 20 or so years. And so you can imagine that, you've had this thing that you've taken care of, that you've really invested time and money and effort in trying to get yourself better, right? As an individual, as a professional, you went to classes, you went to SDMA, you've, done all this stuff to try and be at your absolute best. And now somebody's going to take that away from you. And that's a gut-wrenching feeling, right? And so we had this conversation one-on-one and it turned into, okay, well, what do you do? What do you do now? And, the gentleman sat there for a minute and he said, well, there's still a lot to do. And I just about jumped up out of my chair and fist pumped. And I was like, you're darn right. There's a lot more to do. So let's talk about what this conversation looks like when you go in there and have a one-on-one. Okay. So the first thing is, number one, if we're going to do synthetic, we're going to do it the right way. We're going to make sure that there's no corners cut because we as a district can't afford that. Number one, we're already taking it and we're kind of going out on a limb here financially to do this, but we are not going to cut corners to save a few bucks that's going to cost us a lot of money, right? I'll attribute a quote to a golf guy, Dave Wilbur, here real quick. You can do a lot of work in 3 months on a construction site that you'll pay for the next 10 years, maybe longer, right? So that was number one, was that we're going to do this right. We're going to make sure that we have all the people on our side to make sure it gets done right, because this isn't just about what's happening in the next 3 months. It's also what happens for the next 10 years. How do we maintain that? How can we have, and this was, what we centered on, how can we have the safest synthetic turf surface in the state of Ohio? Nobody, I think people will always just assume, well, it's going to be this way, but nobody has really gone out there to say, hey, we're going to build it safe and we're going to maintain it safe and we're going to verify and show that it's safe, right? At that level, it's unheard of. So that was the first part of the conversation, right? The next part of the conversation was, well, hey, you're right. I'll use, some pseudonyms here, but Bob, the superintendent, Bob, you're absolutely right that we're going to save some labor here. It's not going to be as much as you think. And I'm going to track the data to show what we do save, because I agree it's important to show the taxpayers that we are saving some money on this. But now with that savings, there's going to be some extra time, and there's also going to be some extra funds that, you know, we're probably going to put some away for, you know, the eventual replacement of the synthetic field. But there's quite a bit of work on the baseball and softball fields that need to get done, Bob. And with all this extra time and some of these extra funds, I think it'd be an awesome opportunity to go ahead and start looking at what we can do. And I'm not saying right now, because, you know, we've got to get this football field done and get it done right, just as I said before. But it's time to start thinking about the priorities and how they're going to shift now to where our money's going, where my time's going, and where the time of my staff is going. I'm glad that you made this decision. I support it. I might not agree with it at first, but I'm going to do my best to support you in this decision. And right now, I'm just looking ahead to the future of what we can do with some of this extra money. Completely different conversation than, Bob, I can't believe you did this. I'm going to, you know, slash your tires in the park. You know, that would do that. You definitely get fired on that one. But I'm just saying that take that energy, right? Because all that emotion that we just talked about, Meg, takes a ton of energy out of you. Take that energy and put it to something useful. And so that was one of the proudest conversations I've ever had with a sports turf manager. Proudest conversations, because, you know, we had been working up to that point, and again, that person, an individual, had so much invested in that field that I hurt for them. I really did. But on the flip side, I knew what the answer was. The answer was, hey, there's still a ton to do here, and let's get it done. Let's get after it. Let's have the safest synthetic field that we can, right? Safer than anybody else in Ohio. And let's start taking some of this time and money that we should have, right? That that other folks so passionately advocated for in these meetings, that, hey, we're going to save time, we're going to save money, all this and that. You're right. We are going to save time and money. And guess where it's going to go when we take it back? We're not saving it. We're just reallocating it. So again, that's what I would say there is, if it doesn't go your way, try to find the opportunity in it to make yourself whole again, and find new ways to get those intrinsic rewards that you used to get from whatever it was that was taken away, whatever it is that's changing, right? And adapt.
A cliche as old as time. One door closes, another one opens, right?
Yep.
We're just hitting them with cliches left and right. If that's all they take away from this.
One field gets torn out and another one gets built, right? So like this, that'll be, well, you know, Bob will have a baseball stadium and a football stadium to his name someday, I think. But,
that's right.
I sure hope so. But no, we all go through that. We all go through rejection. We all go through being told no. And that's the other point I'll make there too, is that I can't tell you how many times I've been told no about a project, a process, a practice, a budget request, whatever. And you know what? I just go up to the plate and keep taking my cuts. And that's what you have to do. You have to have that mindset that, and I see a lot of people, they get beaten down and they feel like, man, if I ask, it's just going to be no, it's going to be no, it's going to be no. But I think too, is it shouldn't just drive you to ask more, but it should drive you to put into practice a lot of the things that we just talked about in the preparation piece and the perspective piece and setting those priorities and trying to bring those people together closer and closer, so that they understand your perspective and they can know that you're trying to deliver the best possible fields for, you know, the athletes that are playing on there, the coaches, the programs, the communities, all that, that stuff. You've got to show them that you're invested in that, and that's what you're there for.
100%. I've enjoyed this conversation so much, and I really think there are some tangible assets that people are going to be able to take away from this. Is there anything I didn't touch on that we wanted to make sure was included?
No, I think we covered a lot of ground, and you know, the biggest thing I would say that we didn't cover is that regardless of what you think you're going through, guarantee you that somebody else has gone through it before. And so reaching out and building out your network of being able to ask people that maybe have been reaching out and networking with people with STMA chapters, both locally and nationally. I think those are all good things, is to try to find some other perspective, right? from somebody who's been in that situation, maybe not in your exact situation, but has faced those same decisions, conversations, uncomfortableness, and trying to just work through it, right? Because it's not this linear path. It's just, hey, you do this, you check the box, you do this, you check the box, so on and so forth. It doesn't happen like that. So it's fraught with, you know, twists and turns and changes and everything like that. So finding those people that you can trust and rely on locally, nationally, whatever, is a really, really key piece. Sometimes just to vent, and other times to ask and say, hey, what did you do in this situation? Or what would you do in my situation? Those are really important people to have by your side.
Sharing in conversation always can diffuse, you know, a situation before it even happens. Going on vacation with my in-laws in a day here, and I've just been asking everyone in the office, like, just trying to bounce, like, how do you guys split the costs, or how do you deal with this? And I just find myself, you know, that stomach ache is kind of diffusing itself, and I'm easing into the idea of all the different possibilities that come with going on vacation with your in-laws. So, you know, applying that practice into sports turf, man, I can see it being effective as well. Just shared thought is always, always good perspective to when you're going into an uncomfortable situation.
Agreed. I was going to say kudos to you for pushing into the uncomfortable and pushing yourself. Growth will happen.
100%.
I can see you buying a timeshare with the in-laws sometime next year. You know.
Oh Lord! Let's not get ahead of ourselves. That is
fair enough.
That is not in the vision. But Ryan, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I've enjoyed getting to know you better, and definitely your perspective, I think, is super unique with all your experience. How about you plug your channels or where people can find you? If they're in the position where they need further consulting on an issue like this.
Yeah, absolutely. So the best places to find me is www.fieldsourceohio.com. You can catch up on our projects primarily on Twitter. So at FieldSourceOhio on Twitter. And then if you need to get a hold of me directly, have a question, a comment, a concern, or a cliche to add to the ever-growing collection that we have here, it is Ryan at FieldSourceOhio.com. Meg, I really enjoyed it. I thank you so much. I love what you're doing here. Keep doing more of it, and good luck on vacation.